The Talk of the Northwest. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the Greg Hughes Show here in Highland Radio. And it's the start of another brand new week on this Monday, the 18th of May, 2026. And I do hope you're all very well indeed. How was your weekend? I'm pretty quiet, I'm not going to lie to you. A lot of telly, a lot of sport on over the weekend. But there is every weekend now, it seems. But anyway, here we are. Plenty of action. Congratulations to Celtic fans, Armagh fans, Westmeath fans. Fans of golf were in for a treat into the midnight hour last night as well. There was lots going on. Lots of other stuff happening as well too. If you want to talk about whatever you came across over the weekend, maybe there's something you believe we should be talking about. The lines are open for you. This is your programme. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 074 91 25000 is the number you call. Or give us an email on comments@highlandradio.com. And to invite you to watch the programme, if it suits you, we present the show for you visually every single day. And it's YouTube is the most versatile because you can watch it across your mobile devices and you can fast forward, rewind. You can't fast forward because it's live, but you know what I mean. But also, if you're at home or working from home, you can stick us up on your smart TV. Just open the YouTube app. All smart TVs have it. Type in Highland Radio Ireland. Click it and you'll see we're live. Give us a like and a subscribe if you can. Or that's good if you've got a Fire Stick and not a smart TV. And many of you do have them as well. A devastating weekend on the roads here in County Donegal. Absolutely shocking. Two young men died in a South Donegal collision just close to Clare there. Two very popular, well-known young lads, originally from Ardrahu and Leto Barra, with a huge friends network. It is a tragedy that obviously is, we see the loss of two lives, the devastation in the families, and that ripple effect across an entire community of people that were close to them. And as that news was coming to us, we learnt then of a second collision Saturday evening in Muff. Another young man in his 20s, his life taken. Three young men died on our roads, the county's roads. Four across the country, I believe. But so far this year, 10% of all fatalities on our roads, very close to 10%, have happened in County Donegal. And it is absolutely heartbreaking. And for such a small, relatively tight community, it is very, very difficult to take. And it's covered on the front of the Derry People Donegal News. It was a tragic weekend in Donegal as three men sadly lost their lives in two separate collisions in Barnesmore and Muff on Saturday afternoon. Two men were killed in a two-vehicle road traffic collision on the N15 at Clare between Donegal Town and Barnesmore. Two occupants in one vehicle, a man aged in his 20s and a man aged in his 30s, were pronounced deceased at the scene. And then, as I mentioned, on Sunday, a man died following a single vehicle collision in Muff on Saturday night. And our thoughts and prayers and everything going out to the families and friends of those young men and four, in fact, in the South Donegal crash. Four people were removed to hospital for treatment as well, and we hope they have a full and speedy recovery. But very, very difficult to know what to say and what we need to do to try and reduce as much as is possible the carnage on our roads, and of course then from that the devastation that it wreaks and the young lives lost. We'll talk about that a little later on, but I'll continue with the rest of the papers. The Derry News this morning: the North's mental health champion did not mince her words regarding the failure of Stormont's mental health strategy 2021 to 2030. In line with commitments made as part of the New Decade, New Approach Agreement, January 9th, 2020, the Health Minister, Robin Swan, launched the strategy in June 29th, 2021. And you can hear, you can read those comments in that paper today. On to the Nationals, and Fianna Fáil had their Ardèche at the weekend, and the rumblings over the future of Micheál Martin continues, and he's I suppose, being proactive in that regard. I'm reading from the Irish Independent here. Taoiseach Micheál Martin has warned his rivals against trying to create fresh leadership controversy after Friday's by-election. The voting in Galway West and Dublin Central will have implications for all three of the main party leaders, with most in Fianna Fáil seeing them as a lost cause or lost causes. While Fine Gael has a chance in the West and Sinn Féin leads the polls in Marylou McDonald's Dublin Central constituency, Mr Martin's party is not competitive. However, he's tried to preempt any backlash by saying people are fed up of politicians just thinking about themselves and positioning. He warned that Ireland needed to avoid what has happened in the UK, where they are on the cusp of seven prime ministers in a decade. And in what? Well, that I don't think. Like, I'm not judging Micheál Martin on his performance. It's not for me to do so. But just because Britain has had seven prime ministers in a short period of time, it doesn't mean that a prime minister of another country shouldn't be held accountable or should, you know, potentially lose their job if enough people feel that they're not doing that job well enough. I mean, that's crazy. You know, that's not the litmus test, is it? You are judged in your own country on your own performance. And as I say, if enough people, primarily it seems within Fianna Fáil, want to change, well, they want to change. Who cares what's happening in Britain? We shall see. But he's already sort of saying, look, we're probably not going to feature too well in these two by-elections, so calm the brigand. And in what could be interpreted as an olive branch to his detractors, reading on here, Mr. Martin said, I think that's the issue for us as a party, and I'll always do the right thing for the party. Of that, be under no illusion. Some backbenchers who spoke to the Irish Independent last night were not convinced, though. And there is, and there has been for quite some time, quite a number of backbenchers who have for years been wanting a change at the top, a change of direction. So there's no surprise there. It rumbles on, but it's going to take something else, it would seem, to threaten Micheál Martin's tenure as head of Fianna Fáil. Figures released today of earners at RTE. The reason I say this is because you directly pay their wages through your licence fees. So I think there's a great deal of interest out there. And more than 200 people at RTE were being paid more than €100,000 annually at the end of last year. 200 people on over 100k. That's massive, isn't it? Especially when many of you listening aren't necessarily happily with what's delivered. The figures were released prior to the controversy that engulfed the public service broadcaster last week. It emerged last Thursday that the presenter and producer, Derek Mooney, had been omitted from its list of the top 10 highest earners presenters at RTE since 2020, while other top stars had their fees slashed by 15% that year as part of a 600 million euro restructuring plan. Mooney's pay decreased by a far more favourable 3.7% because he was classified as an executive producer. So you might not have heard him on the radio for quite some time. But he's still raking in the bucks. New RTE figures also reveal that 18 people at the station were earning in excess of €200,000 on December 31st last. Of those, 12 were in the pay band between €225,000 and €300,000, but RTE declined to give a detailed breakdown of the highest earners. I don't know what Derek Mooney does. Maybe he's fantastic value for money. There's one of the top 10 earners is Mr. Lee. Probably a lovely fellow, I'm sure, a very good journalist, but I never hear him on RT. I tune in from time to time. Every now and again, it's just like a press release as it relates to, you know, something medical, but he must be flat out behind the scenes. Finally, on the Irish Times, finally, in terms of the broadsheets, catering on deportation flights was changed after pork sausages were included as part of an Irish breakfast served on a forced return flight to Pakistan, according to a Human Rights Monitoring report. The first chartered deportation flight transporting 24 adult men to the country, which has a majority Muslim population, took place on September 23rd, 2025. A human rights monitor travelled on board along with Gardaí, a doctor, an interpreter. A monitor is appointed by the Department of Justice for each deportation flight to report on the operation, the treatment of returnees, use of restraint, and to make recommendations to note exceptionally good practice. So they've got rid of the pork sausages. And it's just interesting that you have a human rights monitor Like, say, for instance, for these flights, is there a human rights monitor for the defective concrete box crisis, for an example? I mean, has the government appointed one? I'm not comparing two things. It's very important, of course, that people's culture is respected, isn't it, as they're put on a plane to fly home. But they've got literally people on there to make sure their human rights are being protected. And I just wonder, in other areas of society, is there a human rights oversight for children with additional needs to ensure that they get timely access to CALMS and timely access to occupational therapy, etc.? Is there a human rights advocate there to ensure that, you know, downgraded homeowners get the justice that they deserve in the defective concrete block crisis? I don't think so. Maybe there is. It'd be great if there were. On to the Sun now. And we did have that 24-hour stoppage by ambulance drivers last week. There is a 48-hour strike looming. Efforts ongoing to try and avert that. And it's something we do. Like, it will be sorted. This will be sorted. It always is. There's no pay dispute that rumbles on and is never, this will be sorted. So it was very important that everybody tries to crack their heads together and get it sorted before we have to endure a 48-hour strike, because this, as I said last week, could have serious consequences for patients. Ambulance workers have vowed to return to the picket lines if meaningful progress is not made in talks. National Ambulance Service staff held a 24-hour strike last week. Members of Unions Unite and SIPTU walked off the job amid a new row over pay. Their furious management have failed to hike their wages to compensate for a significant increase in their duties. A 48-hour stoppage due to take place on Tuesday and Wednesday was rescheduled so talks could take place. But unions have warned the work to rule action, which took place last Monday, is still in place, and a planned 72-hour stoppage due to take place on May 26th will go ahead if no deal has been reached. So we do have a bit of breathing room there, and hopefully that room is used to come up with an acceptable agreement. And that work to rule, still not insignificant, but it just doesn't have the same impact on patients as the all-out strike might have. The WHO has declared Ebola outbreak a public emergency. I'm referencing this not to get anyone's back up. This is not like COVID was, for an example, though if it was like COVID, I'll tell you, with Ebola, there'd be queues out the street for vaccines, no doubt, because it's a very nasty condition with a 1 in 3 mortality rate. And there's been a big outbreak. Now, the last time there was a big outbreak a couple of years ago, for instance, not that we shouldn't worry about those in the area that it directly affected, but there were 3 cases, the closest to us in Britain, and all 3 of those had been voluntary health workers. So this is not going to spread around the place like COVID, you would hope, but I'll read this anyway, just so everyone knows where we're at in world news. The World Health Organization yesterday declared the Ebola disease outbreak caused by a rare virus in Congo and neighboring Uganda a public health emergency of international concern after more than 300 suspected cases and 88 deaths. The WHO said the outbreak doesn't meet the criteria of a pandemic emergency like COVID-19, and advised against the closure of international borders. And finally, did any of you watch the Eurovision? I mean, it would have been a programme I would have watched in the past, because it's just no harm to see how Ireland does, and if it's mentioned on the programme, just to have a bit of knowledge about it. And also, obviously, this part of it is somewhat enjoyable, or at least it was until it sort of got tied up in politics and all that jazz. Well, Bunga 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 was the winner. Dana, or Dara is her name. Bulgaria's first Eurovision winner, Dara, has said she had doubt and anxiety about taking part in the song contest. But I'm asking you, was it any good if you watched it? The 27-year-old won the competition at the Wiener Stadthalle in Vienna, Austria, with a new song, Banga Banga Rango. It's Banga Rango, which scored 516 points. Now, interestingly, and they say it's not political, Israel came second. Now, they had to stop Israel winning effectively, they had to sort of rejig the voting setup. So they split the votes, like, I think it's 50% audience, 50% judges. So I would say, and I'm not sure if the information is out here yet, Israel must have won the public vote by a massive margin, I would say, to offset so that it finished second as it is. So it would make you wonder about the level of support for Israel, the sympathy maybe out there in the public, or indeed perhaps maybe Israel's ability to get the people that it needs to vote for it to vote for it. England, of course, they finished last. Un point. Oompa, I think, is 1 point. I don't think the BBC want to win that competition anyway, because it's an absolute fortune and it costs an absolute fortune and is no benefit to them. I don't know. You know, when you look at it, should we ever join it again, even if Israel rehabilitates itself or is banned altogether? I don't feel we're any worse off not being in that competition. Now, as we heard over the weekend and at the top of this programme, in our county, County Donegal, three men lost their lives on Saturday and Sunday, bringing the death toll on roads in County Donegal for the year to be six. Councillor Paul Canning is Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council and joins us now. And Paul, such devastation right across the county and such horrific news that we learnt. And just a terrible time for communities both in the north and south of our county.
Yeah, as you said, Greg, good morning to you and good morning to your listeners. Listen, it's devastating news to have this weekend. Three young fellows lost their lives in such tragic circumstances. And first and foremost, our thoughts are with the families and condolences to them. And also, our prayers are with those that are still in the hospital, waiting on treatment, etc. And hopefully that they make a full recovery. But devastating news for everybody in the locality because, as you know, Donegal and Derry, such close-knit communities. And news like this just puts a numbness in everybody, and like our hearts are with all of the families. And also on that, I want to pay tribute to the emergency services that are called out in these circumstances, and they don't know what they're going to see or what they're going to face, and it must be very difficult for them. So like, a big thank you to them for the work that they do on a daily basis.
Yeah, indeed, and the clergy as well who often attend these scenes in very difficult circumstances. This is not in any way to predetermine the outcome or cause, and there's never an easy time, unfortunately, in our county to talk about road safety because, unfortunately, we see so many collisions and serious injury. And in fact, even on Sunday, there was a further collision in the south of the county as well. Thankfully, no one seriously injured in that. I did hear calls coming from Sligo County Council for the government to treat, from someone within the council, to treat the situation on our roads. I can't remember the exact phraseology, but it was effectively as a crisis to sort of get a team together and say, is there anything we can be doing now and treat it as the significant issue that it is to try and prevent the full extent of deaths that we might see over the course of this year? Do you think that that's maybe something that we should look at, a national working group to focus specifically on what short and medium term measures could be introduced?
Yeah, we are always looking at different ideas to try and make our roads safer. And all of the elected members within Donegal are steady on to council officials to get more ramps, etc., in areas. Because it seems to be the only thing that works to slow traffic down is the physical is a physical ramp on the road. And I know most of these accidents are on national roads, and we are educating or trying to educate people as many as possible. And we do have presentations, etc., been made by a lot of people in relation to the safety of our roads. And it's just, we just have to keep harping on about it, you know.
As it relates to these two locations of these collisions, and again, this is not in any way to be insensitive or predetermine any Garda forensic investigation or what have you, but both areas would be areas where the public have concern about the road layout or the behaviour or how traffic is controlled in these areas. I mean, the TAI would have responsibility, at least in one of these locations. It just seems to be that the motorists and the people on the ground sort of recognise where the problems are, potentially, and I'm speaking generally here, but it takes so long to get changes implemented. Like, say, I won't go into specifics, but do you understand where I'm coming from? Like, we know these hotspots around the county.
Yeah,
go ahead, Paul.
I do. And whenever we put this to the TAA and people that are in road design offices, et cetera, they still give us the stat, you know, we say, well, we have had one accident and you have 300 or 3,000 or 4,000 cars using that road every day and they don't have an accident. So yeah, that's the stats that they keep throwing back at us, even though we keep saying, like, we need to look at this and we need to look at that. And we, as I say, we just have to keep the pressure on all the time to try and make it more safe for people to use, because there is a lot of fatalities in Donegal for some reason, and we just have to look at it. And I know the vehicles are getting much quicker, and the distractions are becoming more and more evident with phones and with everything that's attached to a car now. It takes people's concentration to a different place.
Yeah, and I
so there's a lot of things that goes on that needs to be looked at.
100%, and I do understand what you're saying, and you're quite right. There are three elements, really, to safety on the road. There's driver behaviour, there's the condition of the vehicle, and third, and really quite importantly, is the condition or the layout or the setup of the roads. And we often focus on the first two, we're speaking generally now, and not as much on the third, if you know what I mean. It just seems that the first two are what we always hear about, and quite rightly, and we should continue to do so. But then when you start talking about what can often be the third contributing factor, i.e. the condition of the road, the set speed limits, enforcement, and what have you, it kind of all of a sudden we end up going back to the first two, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does make sense, and we have looked at situations where we see whenever you go down the country where you see a stretch of road that has been monitored through the speed camera. We have a speed camera located in between Manor Conyngham, Newton Conyngham, and it does its job for 100 meters. When you go down the country, there's certain they have a certain point, a finishing point that does a speed limit for maybe 10 or 20 miles, where they do the average speed, and that seems to be something that we need to look at. So,
well,
if you have an average speed,
it wouldn't be comfortable. Exactly. So you could have, you know, and people, you see, this is when we get into a space where next thing you know, motorists start going, I'm interested in road safety, but at the end of the day, we have to do all we can. So if you had an average speed camera from Ballybofey to Donegal Town, from Ballybofey to Letterkenny, yes, from Letterkenny to Lifford, from Letterkenny to Bridgend, for an example, you know, and then if you use Letterkenny to Dunfanaghy or wherever, you know, like, in fairness to the local authority members, all for the couple of days last week and even into this week, like, you guys are coming up with suggestions. You're saying, look, the traffic through Kilmacrenan is crazy. We need to do something about it. So we as the public need to understand, as much as you can do, the local authority members are sort of trying to bring it up. You know, and as I say, we've carried it extensively over the last 5 or 6 days. But it stops there for some reason. You know, the local authority members who speak on behalf of the public, I think we can say, right, their calls, their common sense suggestions fall on deaf ears, and yet we're left then to pick up the pieces when there's these inevitable tragedies.
Yeah, that's correct. That's what we come up against all the time, no matter what the subject is, and that's where we just have to keep, as the man says, keep at it. But we are looking at a lot of different avenues, and that is one of the avenues that they are looking at. Like, but it takes a lot of time at times, and you wonder, like, nationally, why it takes so long. But we do need to look at this slowing down the speed on the roads, because that's, at the end of the day, the vehicles are travelling far too fast, and it is some of those vehicles, like the dangers that they create a lot of the time with the speed, is just phenomenal. So I think we do need to take a serious look at ourselves and see what we need to do to make our roads safer.
All right, OK. Thank you very much indeed for your time, Councillor Paul Canning, who is the Ciar Mhaoibhreac of Donegal County Council. And I'm watching the ticker scroll by as we're having that conversation. For those of you who are watching, traffic concerns being raised about Dromahol School. We do it all the time here. There is, would there be a dozen of places where we know that there is a higher risk of something happening. And I don't know, we just need to sort of start saying, when are we actually going to really start doing something about that? Finally, and I'm sure it's very, very clear that our conversation, mine and Paul's conversation, isn't relating to the events of the weekend. It's about talking about what can be done into the future to try and mitigate as much as is possible. Because, as I say, we're up here in the Northwest, and year to date, there are 26 counties in the Republic of Ireland, including these figures, and we're very close to 10% of the total of deaths on our roads. And that's not a percentage or a number. These are real people with real families, real communities. And, you know, it's tough. There's going to be a lot of, like, I'm thinking of these three young lads that have lost their lives. And, you know, I'd know some of the friends of some of these boys as well. And there's going to be, like, you know, 20, 25-year-old young lads having to put on black suits and go to their funerals, and the impact it'll have on them and their mental well-being. And that just is, you know, part of the ripple effect of these tragedies. And as I say, that's not to mention the mums and the dads and the brothers and the sisters and the aunts and uncles and granny and granddads who are devastated by these events. So generally speaking, going forward, anything, surely anything we can do to try and reduce it, I think at this point we should be reducing it. And some of the stuff that's been done, some of the knee-jerk stuff, really wasn't, it was messing around the edges. It doesn't really talk about the main problems that we have and on the roads that we have them. Now, as you would know, if you're a regular listener to this show, we speak regularly about scams because it's like whack-a-mole. You know, you kind of try and get an awareness out of one scam to get awareness out about one scam, and then another one pops up. And unfortunately, you know, back in the day, what were scams? You'd get a letter from a prince somewhere saying that, you know, he'd inherited billions and you could have a slice of it. But now, in this day and age, we're contactable in all means. Our information has been leaked to a great extent as well. So, in other words, we're always, it feels, one or two steps behind the scammers. So that's what makes it even more important, I think, when sort of people speak out, having been the victim of it. Because often what we do is we kind of feel like, oh, I can't believe I got caught out by that one. And we don't even tell the guards in some cases. So that's why I think it's so great that Amy Donaghy is joining me now to discuss, unfortunately, a scam that she was subjected to. Is it Amy or Amy Donaghy?
It's Amy.
Amy, I got it right the first time. How are you, Amy? Thank you so much for joining
Hi,
us.
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Right, now, you got done by a scammer and it was right into car insurance. So what happened?
Yeah. So basically last year I took out car insurance with a broker, and then I got stopped by the police and they said, you're not insured, but I had paid for the insurance and everything was thinking I was insured, got sent documents through my email that looked really legit. Then I got pulled over by the police and they said I wasn't insured, and I was like, I've paid for insurance, and I showed them stuff and they were like, well, you're not coming up as insured, you're not insured, and that broker's fake. So I had to go through court, and the judge was kind of like, no insurance means a fine, penalty, or driving ban. Mm. So I was just like, oh my god. But then my solicitor kind of fought my point to say that she had paid for insurance, she thought she was insured, and she had no idea that she wasn't insured. So then it had to be adjourned for 2 weeks, and the judge came back then to say that I didn't get anything, no fine, no anything.
Yeah, but that was down to a good legal representation you had. You know, if it had been the other way, you could have been walking out the victim of a crime, and also, you know, having to pay for that in many years to come in different ways. How did you come across the broker? Because, you know, you sound like a young person, Amy, so you just invested in a car. I think you spent £500 and £5,000 in a car, which is no mean feat, and then the insurance on top of that. So, how did you find this broker, or how did you come to deal with them?
It was being promoted on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, and a few of my friends actually had got insurance off them, so I just thought that it was right.
Yeah, well, I think that's fair enough. was it a physical person, someone based in a particular place, or was it sort of like an online service, Amy, as much as, I don't think at this point we can name anybody, but I'm just trying to get a sense of how this this company presented itself.
Yeah, it was an online company.
Did in the process of, you don't use in Northern Ireland, you don't actually have do you have an insurance disc on your windscreen? You don't, do you?
I don't think so, no.
Right, okay. So is there any way that we have to actually check if our insurance is our insurance? Because who's to say? There could be, you know, thousands of people driving around the north or south, for that matter, believing that they have insurance and not having insurance.
Yeah, well, you can look up your registration online.
Right.
I'm not sure what the website's called, but you can do it. So I did that after, and it was coming up as well that I wasn't insured. But maybe I should have done that before.
I don't think that's a realistic expectation. Maybe it is now, but at the time, I think, you know, you'd done the daily exchange, the money, you'd got emails that gave the impression that you had. Did you get insurance since, out of interest?
I got insurance.
Can I ask how much it was?
My daddy had to pay for it because I just can't afford it at all.
No, I was just curious if he was like sort of trying to tease you with half price insurance, or if he or she was charging you the full whack. Right, and again, thankfully you had good legal representation, Amy, so this doesn't follow you around. It's bad enough being out the money, right? Okay, well, listen, safe travels. Thanks for helping us get that message out there. Just would you sort of say, be very cautious for these types of services or any types of services, engaging on social media like that, you know, maybe with a company that, you know, doesn't necessarily have a reputation out there?
It's so easy to fake everything online these days. So
true, yeah.
If it's too good to be true, then it's definitely too good to be true.
Yeah, okay. Listen, thank you very much for that. Thanks for helping us get the message out to others. Look after yourself.
No problem.
Thank you very much indeed. So there you are, Amy engaging with an online broker. Her friends had also been customers and victims of this person. It could be a man or a woman or a collective, I don't know. But it just goes to show to be extra careful because, you know, she got away with it in that case. I think in future cases, maybe a judge might argue, well, there's been other cases out there and you should know and this, that and that. So just be extra, extra careful there. Have you any information or knowledge of that? That you can add 086 60 25,000. Got a note in from a listener. We stuck this up on our social media as well, just to see what kind of reaction it might get. Hello, says this listener. I hear what you're saying about disabled parking spots, but could you address people who park in the child parent parking spots who don't have any kids getting out from their car? I have three sons under 6 years of age who have autism. When no child parent parking spots aren't available, it's tricky at times getting him out of the car without throwing out the car door at times, which can hit other cars. And it's awkward for me trying to keep him in one spot. So I believe one child has autism, sorry. It's difficult trying to keep him in one spot without running out in front of cars with the tight spaces available in regular parking spots. I really need the child parent parking spot. And when people park in this spot without any children at all, to me, it's just as bad as parking in a disabled parking spot when you and your passenger doesn't have a disability. Yeah, okay. How big is that? I think to some extent, now, most of the places I go, but I don't be in Letterkenny, for an example, or other big urban areas, most of the places I go, there are free parent and toddler spots. Is there a widespread abuse of it? This listener obviously knows, they're living through this. But do people sort of see it as a victimless crime? Do they sort of go, well, it's not for people with a disability, it's just for handy for mums and dads? And I wonder, do you maybe sometimes not consider that there are many parents like this who maybe, you know, want to take their children shopping with them, and they need those spots with the wider spaces closer to the shop, etc. So just what do you think about that? Is there a widespread problem of people abusing the children parent parking spots? Why is that? Maybe it's a lack of knowledge. Maybe I'm being too forgiving. Maybe it's just willful ignorance. Right, I'm going to take a break. We're going to be talking football. And what a weekend of football it was to Armagh. I didn't realise, I don't know why, I didn't realise that it was so long since they enjoyed Ulster success. Westmeath were amazing. You know, you often wonder, wouldn't you? I'll put this to Brendan, he's going to join me shortly. You'd often wonder, you know, what's next after Jim McGuinness's term? Who's going to take over the reins? Well, we could be blooding someone down in Westmeath. We're joined on the programme now by Brendan Devaney, presenter of Highland Radio's DL Debate podcast, which is for you, available for you tonight, live on the radio at 7. Hi, Brendan.
Hey, Greg, my grass is growing too fast. I can't keep up with it. I don't know what to...
Well, you see, that's because life works... life works like that. You don't really want the grass, so it's grown like bejesus. And,
I need that robot, Jock. I don't have time for this garden at the minute.
Well, can I say I got one?
Oh, did you?
I did. And it's amazing. It's astonishing.
There you go.
But if you want a recommendation on which one to get, I'll let you know.
Hey, email out of it.
Yeah, I will, yeah. Westmeath beat Dublin yesterday by 228 to 26, and they beat them. They beat them after extra time as well. They survived a comeback and just found that... I think last week we were talking about grit and resilience and finding something when you need it. Weren't we? And you says maybe Cork didn't have it and another team did. Well, Westmeath had it in abundance yesterday. What an amazing achievement for that county and our own Mark McHugh.
Yeah, listen, as I say, what a story. Just missed out in promotion. Obviously got relegated last year. Mark was in there as a coach with Dermot McCabe, who's took over Cavan since. But, you know, first big job. Mark had been coaching different teams around the country, you know, and I suppose the experience of all that led him into his first management role here. So, I mean, what a season. I mean, to beat Meath was unbelievable. To come through the Kildare game as well. And then the Dublin game, particularly after Dublin played against Louth, they looked like they were on it again. You know, they only conceded 10 points. Conor Killen was to be back and everything was pointing to a Dublin victory. But, the last time they played, 2017, Dublin beat them by 34 points. Like, so you knew going into this game it was going to be a lot tighter, but look, Loughton, their main striker, he is their talisman, he is their Michael Murphy. He was missing. So everything was pointing towards a Dublin victory, but it just shows you, as you said there, Greg, that bit of grit and bit of belief Mark has put into him with his backroom team. So what a day for Westmeath.
Yeah, I mean, managers can go into big teams that are in the doldrums, you know, and turn things around and but this is a different story altogether. I mean, he's brought he's not a top eight team, right? But he's brought them to glory, generational glory. Like, what does that say about him as a manager? What's he doing? Is it getting the right players? Is it the right training schedule, right training regime, but also getting the heads right?
Yeah, it's a combination of everything, Greg. And I suppose first year into, sometimes you get a bounce, you know. The last time they won Leinster, Paddy O'Shea came on, and it was just a one first season kind of lift too. And sometimes you can get that big bounce. If you look at Tyrone a few years back when Mickey Hart retired, Virgo Logan's actually on the show later. He came in and, you know, Tyrone won All-Ireland and you got that big bounce on the first year. So listen, new people coming in, fresh approaches, a couple of coaches in there from Tyrone along with them as well. So certainly they've found the right mix. And I think now, what you're looking at the provincials has been brilliant now. Like, what was happening when the group stages of the championship really started to take over, you're thinking, right, the provincials are a bit of a hindrance, particularly the teams in Ulster. But really what you're looking at, Westmeath can't win the All-Ireland. But here they are having a massive day in Leinster.
Why can't they win it?
Oh, listen, Rick, this is Dublin aren't the Dublin of old. Leinster has been weakened somewhat. You know, obviously Meath, you know, I think will come back, maybe be better as the championship goes on. But if you look at the ingredients to go all the way, that's not a realistic possibility for Westmeath. They might do well in the group stages. But like a lot of teams, Greg, you're looking at, look at Roscommon, the buzz and the hype last year. Provincials, as we've taken away maybe some of that group stage type of mentality into the All-Ireland series, it's pushed back a bit of the light onto the provincials. And they've all been brilliant except for Munster. Munster's been the only letdown. The other three provincials have been great.
Yeah, Armagh edged out Monaghan. Great weekend for the bookies, it has to be said. Armagh 228, Monaghan 25 points. I mean, amazing scenes in Clonus, and I'm sure in Armagh afterwards. It meant so much to them, having not really picked up that title for quite some time.
Massive, Greg. Listen, I was up covering the game yesterday. The atmosphere was electric up there. Listen, Monaghan just never say die. You got to hand it to them. I know Armagh looks like they pulled away towards the end there, but the effort that was put in was unbelievable, because Armagh were controlling the game at times, but Monaghan just wouldn't let it slip. There's some massive moments, huge two-pointers, and it had everything, Greg. But interestingly, obviously, like Armagh, every year they just wanted to win Ulster again, you know, first time since 2008. And previous to that, they'd won 7 of the 10 years previous, so they had bossed Ulster. So to go on such a barren run like this, no one would have seen that coming. And this was the fourth game, fourth year in a row, fourth final went to extra time, but they finally got across the line. I'd say they were glad they weren't playing our boys. That's the only thing, Greg.
Yeah, we're a bit closer now to the big game for Donegal v Kerry. You're going to preview that this evening. Last week, talking to you, I'm not sure if you wanted us to win or lose in terms of what's coming down the line, right? Do we know any more, or have you any sort of firmer feeling about how that game is going to go next week?
Yeah, well, listen, we want to win. I was saying it's the mindset of it is, if we went down there maybe too pumped, maybe and went after them like we did in the league final.
Yeah, we'd have to pay the price later down the line.
But I think, Greg, looking at it, the only time we could potentially play them possibly would be an All-Ireland final or something, and who knows what'll happen in between there. So, listen, go down. Job number one, go down and win the match, Greg. Listen, obviously, Kerry at home. Kerry nearly have two teams, Greg. They have, by far, as we've seen now with all these injuries, the best squad in the country, hands down, because they were able to cope with Cork with about 7-8 players missing and another 4 or 5 going off injured, and they still were too good for Cork. So, listen, they'll be up for this. It'd be really interesting just to see how Donegal play after what happened in their
game. So we have a clue. We don't really have a clue. We don't know. This sounds like I'm speaking negatively against the team, but I'm not. But we don't know what Donegal team's going to turn up. We have maybe a little bit more certainty about Kerry. Am I being dramatic there?
No, that's fair enough, Greg, because we were so out of sorts and down, and now we've had this layoff going into Kerry. And as you're right, Kerry in the Munster final looked themselves. They did the job that they needed to do. And, you know, in Clifford inside, they isolated him, and he's just awesome. Listen, he can just carry that team along. No disrespect to the other players that's on the pitch there. So, listen, you're going down in there, and obviously there'll be a lot of pride. There'll still be that hurt from that league final. So I'm sure that'll be, you know, Kerry will be using that in the build-up to the game in terms of Donegal doing a job on them. So they'll be looking to bring that back. But listen, because Donegal have had that layoff and they're stung now, there's nothing like Jim and them to come in with, you know, that bit of purpose to address what happened in the down game and show that Donegal are still All-Ireland contenders. Sure. So listen, it's set up for a fascinating game. Myself and Oisin and Brendan will be down bringing Brendan Kilcoyne, bringing all the action.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. You got lucky enough to get accommodation, I hope. And, you know, also to, you know, I personally, because I'm more of an armchair fan, of course, I always presume that we have the tactical advantage because of just this the reputation of Jim McGuinness as well. But I mean, you see yesterday in some of the games, and you see all the time, you know, Kerry are down there plotting to undo what they expect Donegal to do to them. Do you know what I mean? So it's not just the 30 players in the pitch and subs. It's also to, you know, who has the tactical advantage as well.
Exactly. The amount of trawling over videos and tactics, and then putting those tactics into training through formations, and whether it be kickouts or, you know, your attack and play, or trying to get the right people on the right ball at the right times. You've seen it yesterday. You know, if you look at, say, Monaghan from Derry, they're very poor in the Derry kickout, squeezing on it, and that's what led to Derry going into such a lead, or a big part of that there. So you could see yesterday they were trying to nullify that, the same with Armagh on Began's kick out. So there's so much strategizing going on in the background there, particularly for that initial possession, because when teams get it now, it's very hard to get it off them. Now, that said, yesterday again, it means so many dry games there. That slippy ball created, you know, so much drama yesterday between players slipping and coughing up possession. So something like that can change the dynamic of the game down in Killarney. But certainly, yeah, I mean, tactics now, Donegal really did a job in Kerry the last day. So both sides have been looking at that, what went well and how do we counteract it.
Fascinating as always, and there's going to be much more conversation about that on the show this evening. Brilliant guests, of course, particularly looking forward to the weekend to get some different eyes on it, but also being able to reflect on the weekend that passed. Guests, Kerry legend Sean O'Sullivan, slot Neil coach Gary McDade, and former Tyrone All-Ireland manager who you referenced a little earlier on, Fergal Logan. It's a good lineup.
Yeah, and if we get, we squeeze a bit of information, at least Kerry boys, they're very cute now. So,
yeah, but they're so cute, we don't want them to give us wrong information. So just be careful. Don't. All I'm saying is don't trust him completely.
Yeah, Gabriel Brannigan read out the Monaghan team there in the coffee morning there, and there was a big round of applause. And of course, there was three changes in before it. So, yeah. Exactly.
All right, listen, have a good evening. That's Brendan Devaney, DL Debate after the 7 o'clock news this evening. By the way, big congratulations to Martin Orr. He's one of the hardest working fundraisers around Letterkenny and beyond. And yesterday he was surprised during his gig in Voodoo as the first recipient of the Highland Radio Hero Awards. The terminology has just slipped my mind. Caroline will remind me anyway. But the actual name of the initiative yesterday that Martin Orr won, Community Hero, that's it. You have the Community Hero Award. So congratulations to you, Martin. Richly deserved. Great video up there as well. And you can just see by the reaction on that the importance that the regard with which you're held in, if you didn't know it already. So again, a big congratulations. And I'm not just saying that because you mentioned me in the video, by the way. I was going to say that anyway. Right, let's get to some of your comments coming in so far this morning. On parking in the spaces that are reserved for toddlers and parents, on child parking spots, there's definite abuse of these spots. It's not easy getting babies or toddlers out of car seats. But yesterday at Lidl in Letterkenny, a car pulled into the parent and child spot and five full-grown men got out. This is one example, but I see many people pull in and get out for their shopping with no child in sight. On that insurance scam we talked of, Greg, you can check your insurance in the north of Ireland by checking askmib.com. That's the Motor Insurance Bureau. Effective. Great. I wonder, is there a similar one in the Republic? So that's askmib.com. That's to check your insurance in the north. And maybe you can do that now. It would be no harm. But do we have a similar database in the south, I wonder? Back on the roads. Morning. Drivers here in Buncrana are appalling. It's getting worse. Our car was hit at the back and the front within 3 months and both drivers were on their phones. It's lawless. I see them every day dodging the guards. No tax, insurance, nothing. Unfortunately, we will not change that mindset. Another, there is a fixed speed camera located on the Derry Road near Newtown Cunningham. It's a revenue generator because of its location. Why isn't it in the gap on the long straight of the road? It wouldn't generate enough revenue on a straight road because it would be seen easier. That's outside a school, and that's a school that this road was built beside, and it slows the traffic down there. So I'm not dead against that. I think wherever those cameras are, this is why the just in case people aren't aware how the average speed cameras work. So say, for instance, if you were leaving out the Donegal Road, Ballybuffet, a camera takes a picture of your number plate and it logs you. And then say, for instance, you're hitting the roundabout there at Donegal Town and another camera registers your number plate. Now, it's worked out if you're to do the speed limit, how long it should take you to get from point A to point B. And if you get there quicker, you're done for speeding. I presume most people know that, right? But I just thought I'd say it in case when we talk about average speed cameras, people don't know about it. So that means effectively, unless you drive at 30 kilometres per hour half the way and 120 the rest of the way, you will have to maintain the safe legal speed or the legal speed. Even if you put that camera that you talk of in the gap, what that does is it just, like the speed vans, it slows people down for the period in advance and beyond those cameras. So that's why there's such a push for these average speed cameras. People might like them, but all they're going to do is ensure that you stay within the speed limit. And also, there's a little bit of lenience there if you accidentally went over the speed limit overtaking or something. You know, you can sort of slow down if you were conscious of that. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, but in a way, there's a little bit of understanding there. The issue is young drivers, says the listener. It's not. I'm sorry, unfortunately. You can look at the profile of the deaths on our roads. And the big mistake we can start making is if we start attributing it to a particular demographic, because it's not. It's not a particular demographic. Yes, maybe they're overrepresented, and that's something we can look at. But I think we need to approach this as, you know, all of us being conscious of how we use the roads. How about we put limiters on cars set to GPS coordinates and only allow a maximum 15 or 20 kilometres per hour for the limit to allow overtaking? They have had it in places like Japan, I believe, for decades. Yeah, but is it on all cars? You know, my son was on had a box in his car, definitely would have altered driving behaviour, I would imagine, because it's not just the main roads. Like, you're starting to do 50 where it's 50, 80 where it's 80. You know, it conditions you to drive a certain way all of the time. Good morning, Greg. Councillors love wasting money. Crap speed cameras don't slow cars down. As I've said before many times, limiters on cars is the only option. That's not the councillors responsible for that, but I hear what you're saying. Another, simply limiters on all vehicles. Greg, now that this might seem trivial after three people died on Donegal's roads last Saturday and Sunday, but why did the Minister for Housing not visit a defective house during his visit to the county on Friday? There are enough such houses for him to visit and enough people for him to meet for whom the current scheme is not working. Why is there only 24 hours notice given of his visit? Afraid of protests and protesters? Yeah, I mean, I understand the logic of getting a minister like that into a house to see firsthand. But I mean, if they don't get it at this stage, if they don't understand the situation at this point, is that going to make any difference? A couple here on the much more trivial issue of the Eurovision, but still, you know, people like to talk. I did watch the Eurovision, was fine like, and I did predict Israel to win. That comes in from Gary D. I watched the Eurovision, about five songs that weren't ballads. Luckily, one won. Banga, banga, banga. Welcome back. Just a couple of messages in before I go to our next guest. Can I say a big thank you to the farmer and his daughter in the Muff area who helped for the Vintage Club, out of a field yesterday. Many thanks. Dennis McGonigal, Main Street, Buncrana. A big happy birthday to you, Dennis. That's coming in from Annette. Right, now my next guest on the programme is Karen Quinn. Good morning, Karen.
Hello, Greg.
Thank you so much for calling in to us. How are you keeping?
I'm not too bad,
thanks. Okay, right. Now, the Irish MECF CFS Association are holding a free public health event in Sligo on Sunday, the 24th of May. Dr. Amalak Bansal, a leading international myalgic... why did I start with this title? Are you going to help me?
Myalgic encephalic mellitus.
Okay, and chronic fatigue syndrome expert will speak at the Radisson Blue Hotel Sligo 5:30 p.m. Now, Karen's in with us because you have ME and CFS. So that's chronic fatigue syndrome and ME, which we generally go with because it's such a complicated title. And you also founded the Donegal ME Chronic Fatigue Syndrome Support Group. So those are the introductions out of the way. You've had ME now for 3 decades.
That's right.
Mostly adult life by the sounds of things.
It has. I was actually a district nurse in England. I had just got married. I had everything going for me. And then I got gastric flu in Christmas 1989. I made a recovery, but I kept getting things wrong with me. Mm. I went to the doctor and it went on for a year. Then the year later, and it was March 1991, when I actually started getting not well again, and my health deteriorated and then went on for weeks and then it went on for months. I was then admitted to hospital as I couldn't walk, I couldn't barely move, I just couldn't function hardly at all. So they took me in and they did me every test they could possibly think. I'm fortunate enough, there was a consultant in England that specialised in ME at the time. And he said to me, OK, this is post-viral fatigue. Hopefully you get over it in a year. But if you don't, we call it ME. And that was it. I was sent home just to be bedbound, really. There was no medication. There was nothing they can do.
Mm.
And this basically was 10 years of being totally bedbound.
I'm old enough to remember, certainly in this country, whereby ME, sometimes people were told it was in their head, or that, you know, was that the case in Britain at that time? Were you just lucky to stumble across a consultant?
I was just lucky. Okay. Throughout England, we was told many cases it was in our head because there's no test for ME. So they thought, okay, it's in your head because nothing's coming up, saying there's absolutely anything wrong with you, even though you were feeling really not well. So I was very, very fortunate, just where I lived in the part in London, that this neurologist actually believed in ME.
Yeah, because it reminds me of Lyme's disease, or Lyme disease,
yeah,
for example.
Yeah, very similar.
It reminds me of Addison's. Not necessarily in how it affects the patient, but in terms of trying to get a diagnosis.
Definitely.
Because, I mean, chatted to people, referred to psychologists because, you know, the medical professional deemed it must all be in their head. It must be a psychosis or what have you. So as tough as your journey has been, at least you had recognition early on.
Definitely. And that helped because there's many people out there, even to this day, you know, they're saying it's in your head or you're making it up. Or the one thing they kept saying is it's depression, when it wasn't. ME causes depression.
Of course it would, yeah, you're debilitated.
So it's going to cause depression. But that's not the cause of ME. Most of the time, it is a virus that is causing the ME, the symptoms of being ill. Whether I had gastric flu, some people have the, is it the, there's another name for it. It's a virus, even like long COVID now, you know, it's caused by a virus and people are now not getting over the long COVID. So really that is stemming into ME.
It's in the same space, isn't it? Virus is the one, is it, that's not responsive to antibiotics, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
Right. So in other words, there's no early intervention in that regard that would be of any use, even with sort of an early diagnosis. In terms of treatment, because thankfully, you know, whilst this still impacts you, you have improved, your health has improved, I understand from my notes here. But, you know, from those early days, like, what treatment was there for you?
Nothing.
So how long were you pretty much completely incapacitated for?
It was about 10 years. It was 10 years.
That's a huge chunk of anyone's life, isn't it?
It is. It was just like laying there. We didn't have Sky. We didn't have computers. We didn't have internet. So it was just literally, I just laid there.
Yeah. And it also relies on a great deal of sympathy of those around you because I presume there's that frustration. Just get up, get out. If you get out in the fresh air, you'll feel better.
I used to get told, will you look well?
Yeah. The hidden side.
And, you know, I couldn't even walk. I mean, you look well, but I was lucky to have a husband at the time and great parents and great friends at the time. And they were very, very supportive and helping me cope.
So you had a good network.
I had a very good network.
So 10 years bedbound, what happens that maybe you start getting a little bit more energy back or a little bit more mobile? Is it medication? Is it just the way the illness manifests?
It came from America, and so they was giving me vitamin B12 injections. Mm-hmm. So I was having them twice a week. What with other vitamins and medication. So they did try many things like magnesium to help me. There was one injection I had tried and that actually helped me a little bit, but then it made my heart go erratic, so we had to stop that. So then the injection, so I was trying that, and gradually over the next so many years I was seeing a little improvement that I could get up for a little while and things like that. So it was very, very slow.
And every time you try something new, you have to wait such a long period of time to see if it has any positive impact in you.
Definitely.
It's so, so frustrating.
And it's years. I mean, I've had it, 35, 36 years. So it is a very gradual thing. But even to this day, like, I can't walk, like, long distances. I can't stand for very long. I've got problems with my hands, so I can't write properly because my hands go cold.
So say something like this, all right, whereby you would exercise quite a lot of nervous energy, you know, coming in here, getting here, coming in, sitting down, doing radio, you haven't done it before.
Yeah.
Will this leave you banjaxed this evening now?
Definitely. This will last me about 2 or 3 days. It has a really knocked-on effect.
Mm.
So if you do something today, it'd be the next couple of days that I won't have to do anything.
And nervous energy as well as physical energy, is it?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Okay. Definitely. Even like, say, if I was to sit down and start reading a book, I can't even read that for a long time. The cognitive doesn't allow you to do that and you get really tired and things like that. I did study to be a counsellor in the north there to help people like me, and that was extremely hard because of the cognitive function. There was times I was actually in class and I was practically
It's just like a cruel irony to that, isn't it?
Yeah.
In that you want to educate yourself to help others, but that process is exacerbating your condition.
Oh, definitely. It took me longer to do the course. It took me an extra couple of years to actually do the course because of the work involved. And those times I just couldn't go to college and things like that.
Is ME and chronic fatigue syndrome the same thing?
Yeah, it used to be called just ME, but then...
I think chronic fatigue syndrome, firstly, outside of ME, it's easier to say, but it also actually describes what you're going through. And ME is me, really, other than the big, long, blooming words. So it's a better way of expressing
it. It's not, because I find the name chronic fatigue syndrome, it's just saying, oh, you've got fatigue.
You're very tired. Okay, I get you.
But it's just not like that. It's just there's so many other symptoms involved.
Yeah, and I think this is quite... particularly important where you have hidden illnesses, whereby there's a lack of recognition, support and understanding of ME, CFS. But that's my theory. What's your theory as someone living with it? Why do you think it is, you know, not talked about much? There doesn't seem to be great support networks there.
There's no support network, especially I find in Donegal.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very alone with the illness. I have made a friend and her daughter has it. So we've been chatting. But I feel like there's no support. There's support for so many other things out there with illnesses, but there's nothing for ME. Mm. Even down to the neurologist. I went to a neurologist here when I moved over, and he said to me, I know nothing about ME chronic fatigue, so there's no point coming.
Mm.
So... I'm not under no specialist, nor is the other young girl. And I'm sure the other people in who's suffering, there's no specialist
out there. So how is your treatment plan assessed? Or,
there isn't.
Right. So there's no real area of expertise for, you know, people with expertise in this country for you, really, if the truth be told.
No, not here, especially in Donegal, not here at all.
And is there active ongoing research globally to try and...
There is. There's I mean, England and America, you know, with the doctor that's coming to Sligo.
Mm-hmm.
They're ongoing. They're trying to find, you know, the cause. They're trying to find a test. Globally, yes. But I just feel here in Donegal, we're just left.
Yes, because it's isolation on top of isolation on top of isolation, isn't it, really? You know, and you talked of being lucky with a good infrastructure of people around you, but still, you know, if you can speak to other people that really fully understand it,
Definitely. It
is always helpful, isn't it?
To talk to somebody that also sort of knows what you're going through. Really just help, and you feel less isolated at the end of the day. And that's why I started up the Donegal support group, because I thought, well, at least if people come on, we can group chat and people know they're not actually alone out there suffering from this illness.
Do we know the sort of incidence level of ME? how many people have it in this country? Is there any figures in that regard?
Yeah, I don't know.
It'd be interesting to interesting to see. I know you're not part. I know you're not part of the. You're not associated per se with this event taking place in Sligo, but pleased to see it coming this far to the northwest. I'm sure.
Definitely, definitely, because it's getting more awareness out there. And that's what we want. We want the more awareness. We want the more support out there. Like I said, there's other illnesses out there and, you know, they've got the support. They've got great networks, but we haven't here.
Yeah. And do you be optimistic of the future in terms of, not generally in life, right, but on your own well-being? Like, do you sort of say, right, well, you know what, I'm young enough. Maybe there might be an advantage, might be an advance or... you know, something that might, you know, help to restore. Because, like, I presume you have to go back over 30 years before your gastric flu to the last time you felt 100%.
Oh, definitely.
Energy-wise, like, you know.
I don't ever wake up now and feel okay.
Yeah, because whilst you're just... sitting here talking about it and you're not in the bed any longer, you're still far behind where you should be in terms of
definitely.
Your health and energy levels.
I mean,
It's tough.
But it's just become part of who I am.
Yeah.
You know, part to manage it and know my limits. I mean, I still can't walk properly. I still can't use my hands properly. But it's just part of who I am now, to be fair.
Yeah.
And I do hope, you know, in the future for other people, maybe it won't even be in my lifetime, but there will be other people. You know, there will be a test. They will find out what exactly is caused by it.
Yeah, I have polymyalgia rheumatic. Is it ME, the same condition? Now, Karen is not an expert in all things in this space.
No.
Have you come across that before? No.
No.
Okay, nor have I. Please, could you ask if the lady, if she's been tested for Lyme disease? Her symptoms are very similar to how Lyme disease has affected me. Thank you. That's kind of, I didn't want to ask you directly, but I kind of threw that out there earlier in the interview. Did you?
I don't know, to be honest.
I would be fascinated for you to get your bloods tested on Lyme disease.
I might ask for that because I don't know whether 30 odd years ago they tested for that when I was in
England.
Well,
it's hard to get it done now, but in terms of the fatigue, bed bound, but also too it can start having an impact on some organs, your heart and all this type of stuff as well, you know. So your story has an awful lot of crossover with former conversations and interviews I've done with Lyme disease. So and there are some good networks on that as well. It'd be interesting throwing a comment in there and just never know. Because that's why I was asking about it being a virus and whether you got antibiotics early on, because that would be the traditional treatment for Lyme. And you have periods where you feel good and then you sort of go downhill very quickly as well. But Karen, I think it's great that we're having this conversation. And even, like, it might have nothing to do with Lyme disease, but even getting that awareness out there where we're talking about ME, we're talking about chronic fatigue syndrome, other people out there listening who recognise themselves in you getting in touch with us, you know, so that's part of what you wanted to do, isn't it? Just get that conversation out there, be seen.
Be seen, be heard, and know there is support out there. If you want to go on Facebook, we've got the Facebook up now. So, you know, come and join us so we can chat and get the more awareness out there.
Yeah,
definitely. And know that you're not alone at the end of the day.
For sure. And also, too, just in a series of interviews I've done recently, I mentioned Addison's a little earlier on. Lyme disease as well, and there's a couple of others, and your condition as well. Outwardly, you look fine.
I look well, don't
I? Do you know what I'm saying? And I think it helps us to understand that maybe not everything that you see is, like, say, for instance, I'm not sure if you have a blue badge, and I'm not even asking if you are, but say you did. If you stepped out of the car, people might go, look at her, what's she doing?
Oh, definitely.
Do you get where I'm coming from?
Oh, so definitely.
It just helps open our eyes a little bit more as well. Is there anything else, Karen, that you want to add or something I missed out on or something it's important to you to mention?
I just want to tell people out there, don't give up hope, because even if you're bed bound, for me, after 36 years, there is life at the end of the tunnel. So please don't give up hope. There is support out there. I've trained to be a counsellor, so I'd be quite happy to help you if you're feeling depressed or anxiety due to this illness. You know, get in touch and I'd be happy to help.
Yeah, and I would say there's a lot of tears of the clown out there as well, where people have been maybe too brave for their own good and try and put on a brave face for everyone around them.
You do, you do, because, you know, they're all worrying about you, and that's with any illness. You're the one that's dealing with it.
You're the counsellor to them, saying, I'm all right, I'm grand.
Exactly.
You know, and inside you're blooming dying emotionally, right? Okay, so Karen, you mentioned your support group and also the fact that, you know, you're comfortable for people to reach out to you. Do you have a page or something we can put out, or do we retain your information here and pass it on to anyone who might contact us?
Bit of both. Okay. If anyone's in contact, just pass my details. I'm on Facebook. I've Donegal ME support.
Oh, brilliant.
Group.
So you got so, that. Right, okay. Donegal, yep.
So it's out there as well. Come and join, follow, message me. That'd be absolutely great, to be honest.
Okay, brilliant. People working together. Okay, thanks so much, Karen.
Thank you.
All right, Rick. I really appreciate, and I do hope this is not taking too much out of you and you were able to relax a little bit.
I've got my coffee now, so okay. I should go home and put my feet out and watch the telly.
Do so. Karen Quinn, who has ME, also known as CFS, which I understand actually, you know, when speaking to Karen, chronic fatigue syndrome makes it sound like it's almost like, you know, language to make things seem a little bit okay, when obviously it can be very, very debilitating. So check out Donegal ME, Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, the support group on Facebook. If you want to contact us, we'll pass on any information Karen's happy for us to share. I've got two very special guests in studio, one more important than the other to me anyway. Noel Cunningham, how are you, dear?
I am very well, dear. Thank you. I was really concerned because I was feeling a little bit off colour yesterday and I didn't have time to do hair and makeup this morning to come and meet you. So I feel a little bit vulnerable. So be kind
and
gentle.
You're okay. You're okay. It's good to see.
Stunning was the word I was looking for.
Yes, but you know me. I try and be honest.
Absolutely.
Noel Cunningham is author and brand ambassador for Harvey's Point, Donegal Town, and our own David James, singer and presenter. Busy time for you.
Busy time.
With albums and gigs and all manner of things,
yes.
and golfing trips
and in between
again, you know, Monaco, London. I don't know, how do I get into this group,
this circle?
Yes.
I just don't
how
know.
Do I penetrate it?
I just don't know.
Okay, but anyway, you've earned it. Good to have you with us. And you know, this is I heard this from David last week, Noel, and I reacted to him off air the way I'm going to react on air. Things are changing a little bit in terms of the very, very successful cabarets at Harvey's Point, and you've got this boy in. Fantastic move.
You know,
and I mean that earnestly, by the way.
For me personally, it's a really kind of a source of personal pride and excitement, because years ago I saw David dancing as a child and then singing at other gigs, and I kind of consciously, not subconsciously, thought, I'm going to get that lad into our summer shows by hook or by crook, which I did. I think it's way back in 2018.
2018 or 2017.
Yeah, around that time. And even then, I thought, one day David will host that event.
Wow, okay.
And the reason for that is, and we have to be self-critical of our efforts at all time, there comes a time when you have to look in the cold light of day at what you're doing for your esteemed guests, your esteemed customer, the people who are paying our wages, and say, are we doing enough? Do we need to dial it up a little bit of energy, a little bit of, dare I say, youthfulness, and a little bit of taking other artists who will participate in this great summer lineup, take them out of their comfort zone a little bit as well, to dial it up a bit and make it a little bit more energetic and magical. And that's exactly what it's going to be. And it will be so lovely. And David and I were talking this morning, you know, the whole summer show has a ring about it. Even the word sometimes cabaret is a little bit sort of
No, I like that.
Yeah.
No, I like cabaret. It has to feel. I like it. Dance is grand.
Dance, absolutely not. No, summer cabaret. Cabaret. Absolutely.
I'd own it. I would own it.
Yes. Summer cabaret, bright, lively. Exactly. And the man himself. Young, vibrant, good looks.
No, but not enough about me.
Yeah.
We need to go to our next guest. David James. Come here. Other side of that. You're obviously, listen, you're doing really, really well. It's fantastic, okay? But this is another thing, isn't it? And this, yeah. I'd say this is actually really quite an exciting thing to get involved in.
It's very exciting. And, you know, to be associated with Harvey's Point is something that I'm very, very proud of. And, you know, I'll never forget myself and my dad driving up to Harvey's Point back in 2017, 2018 to meet Noel for the very first time. And we were going up the road in the car saying, what will we say? How will we convince him to let us do this cabaret? But, you know, Noel really took me under the wing and gave me a chance when not many others were giving me a chance. Noel put me on that platform. And, you know, all these years later now to be back hosting it, it's a huge honour.
Big shoes to fill as well, too,
massive,
obviously.
Because
Noel and his successor as well, two fantastic hosts.
Absolutely. Noel and Eamon done an amazing job over the years. And, you know, to be carrying on this torch and taking on what they've done and trying to do it as well as them is going to be a big challenge, but one that I'm really looking forward to. We're bringing in my own band, are going to be the house band now. We're bringing in our own production crew in terms of sound and lighting. So we're going to do everything that we can to make this an exciting, new and fresh show.
And that's where you can sort of rejig things because, you know, in terms of the acts, they're the biggest names in the country. Mm. Right. And that's what people expect to see, Noel. So how do you layer onto that? Right. So you've got beautiful setting. You've got fantastic food. And I can attest to that. You've got the names that you need to see there. So how do you sort of, you know, change things, but don't break what's not fixed? And here you go. You get a new house band.
Absolutely.
You get a new you get a new host. So very, people get the familiarity, but also the fresh. Right.
Very simple. It's all about production now and about quality and resident band, the house band. And I say production values have changed. You know, now just it's not a case of having a spotlight. You know, you have to think beyond that. And all of that is actually the easier part of it. And the other part of it is that David is talking to some of, as you say, the tried and tested, the big names that have been doing it, and kind of guiding them to step out of their comfort zone as well and perhaps add a little bit of new to their programme, which is exciting too.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the there's a series of summer cabarets and then the long-run cabarets then, but every night it's packed, but there's different nights. So theoretically, though people might not, maybe they do, you could go to the three separate nights effectively. Wednesday the 17th of June, Mike Denver, Philomena Begley, Cleona Hagen, along with Niamh and Gavin Shevlin, they're the dancing twins, they are amazing, and David James and his band. Jimmy Buckley's in on Wednesday the 24th, Sandy Kelly, Dominic Kerwin, along with Niamh and Gavin Shevlin, the dancing twins again. And on Wednesday the 8th of July, Patrick Feeney, Brendan Shine, Ronan Collins, along with Niamh and Gavin Shevlin, the dancing twins again, and then David James and his band. Now the four course dinner and show is €75 per person. Now, obviously, there's an awful lot of overheads in relation to this. So I think that's a really good price point because this is a special event.
Yeah,
going to Harvey's. I'm not just saying that, right?
No.
But it is a special event. There's something, there's layers to life, right? There's levels. This is very high level.
Well, Greg, no more than my excitement last week to see your success in the recent sort of listenership reports and you and the team here, Caroline, the whole gang. It's very great because a rising tide lifts all boats. Harvey's Point is a special occasion. You know, it's there to celebrate any special occasion in life. And to go there on a summer's evening and just the setting, the delicious dinner, the warm welcome. And I mean, I'm proud to sit here and say that because I am part of that and I will always champion that cause, the respect for the guest. And we would never, ever go out of our way to fleece our guests.
No, of course.
And as you rightly say, 75 is great value for money, an international show. delicious dinner, that lovely ambience, and of course there's great accommodation package as well if you really want to push the boat out. And David James.
And David too. Do you know these yes. shows, you get bite size of so many acts at the yes. same time, right? So you've got You're the Thread throughout the whole show, mm-hmm. right? But, you know, Jimmy Buckley comes on, he does his bit, right?
Yeah.
And then next thing is what? And another Irish star comes, you know what
yes,
I mean?
Like it's fast just
a,
moving.
It's a very kind of a unique experience. You don't yeah. have time to think. The night goes so quick.
Absolutely, it's fast moving. And, you know, that variety is what makes the show so entertaining for people, because we all like different things in terms of music. And I think no matter what you like, you're going to leave this summer show with the plan that I have in my head. You're going to leave absolutely satisfied and entertained.
Yeah. And then look forward to the extended.
Well, that's what I was going to move on to. Because this is the Summer Cabaret's three nights in June, first week in July, Wednesday, 17th of June, Wednesday, 24th of June, Wednesday, 8th of July. And then the autumn.
We're running September, October, and into the start of November. And then we have the big C word. We have the Christmas one as well.
Oh, we love that.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
I have no problem talking about Christmas in January. I think people sort of have a condition to think you shouldn't, but stuff it. Let's do it. People love Christmas.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the Christmas Cabaret. So that's 2026 looking blooming good.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. It's a big challenge, but it's one that I'm really looking forward to. And, you know, we have some great plans.
I can just see him in the back of the room in his tux with the glasses halfway down the nose.
The pen and paper, yeah. No.
David, dear. David.
Greg, you have made my job that little bit easier, because when I do precisely that, I say, well, you can blame Greg Hughes.
Was it Que Sera Sera? Absolutely. You used to sing, right?
So and
you
I used to sing that. Those were the days.
Oh, that's the one.
Those were the days.
Yeah, you can't do that.
No, that is my song.
We're in the market looking for an A3 clipboard for him at the minute. Like all his notes.
No, it's excellent. Look, stuff. Greg, we have to know more than what you do, Greg. We are Donegal. We are the Northwest. Yeah. Everything we do should have the visitor, the local, and Northwest life in our sights.
And what I think is really nice, and the listener probably understands, but in case they don't, like, there's two beautiful hotels in Loch Esk, and they both benefit each other and the proximity to Donegal Town. It's not like trying to rip trade off everyone. Everyone has something to offer, and it's an entire package. And you know, people generally work really well together, because you said a little earlier on, the rising tide. And
absolutely.
All
yeah. Absolutely. And let's forget that nonsense that we're competing. We're all there to enhance the experience.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, we have Donegal at our core there at all times. You know, we're excited to be bringing people, yes, to Harvey's Point, and yes, to the summer shows, but we're looking forward to bringing people to Donegal.
Is Ronan Collins a new addition? Or has he been up before?
Ronan, I would know Ronan for many years, no more than yourself, Greg. He did something at Harvey's Point back in the day.
Yeah.
But no, he was never part of what I call our summer cabaret staples.
Because I know he's been up a couple of times for the Mary from Dunlop Festival.
And so
he was incredibly popular. Incredibly
talented man. Oh my God, he puts on this great show. Nothing wrong with a bit of nostalgia either, you see.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course not.
Do you know what's lovely? See, when we called Ronan to ask him would he be interested, like, he was so excited to be getting up to Harvey's Point and to being part of this show. And all the artists on the bill feel the same. It's unique in that sense. Of course, we look forward to every show, but there's something that little bit special about these Wednesday nights at Harvey's.
Yep. And it's a plethora of talent on each night. Jimmy Buckley, Patrick Feeney, Dominic Kerwin, Mike Denver, Philomena Begley, Cleona Hagen, Sandy Kelly, Brendan Shine, the aforementioned Ronan Collins, and the incredibly talented Niamh and Gavin Shevlin. And, you know, there's an intimacy to this as well, too. And to see this close up, it's not often. You don't get the chance to do it, right? So, and the food's delicious as well. Well done, David. I think it's a marriage made in heaven. And I've no doubt that you're going to, as good as the two people that were before you and others, I've no doubt you're going to elevate it to something else and bring your own fans as well, too, no doubt. How do people get more information?
harveyspoint.com or 074-972-2208. Call today. Don't be disappointed.
Say the number again.
Yeah. 074-972-2208.
No. You have to go back to the old way. 22278.
074-972-2208.
Thank you. I don't like change. I'm uncomfortable with change. It's 222. Is it two nights for the package or one night?
The package is, as a rule, two nights. Yeah,
okay.
Which gives people a chance to come and relax and settle in and do the show and not think they have to be up at the crack of dawn on the way back home. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Brilliant.
Two nights
stuff.
Gives you the chance to enjoy Harvey's as a proper experience.
Absolutely.
And the area as well.
And great packages, honestly, to include the cabaret and breakfast and those palatial suites. Gorgeous.
Yeah, and because what David was suggesting a little earlier on about being associated with the brand, it's a national brand. It's an international brand. And that's
and may I meant. Am I going to be very cheeky now and mention a Kilcarman? And that's the lovely Mark McHugh.
Brilliant, wasn't it?
Because we were all on the edge of our seat yesterday. And for me, he's both a neighbour and the family friend. And we were so excited. And
cool.
It's really worrying for the gay community that Noel Cunningham is talking about the GAA. They're going to say.
I think it's really worrying for the gay community that you presume all gay men, all women don't love sport.
No, I didn't say I always love sport, but kind of Pimm's and strawberries and tennis at
that's fine.
And
you spilt your Pimm's as that final winning point went.
Absolutely,
okay.
But no, Mark McHugh did an extraordinary job.
Yeah, all right.
And such an inspiration to young people.
Fantastic.
It's marvellous.
Excellent. And David, you're back on this afternoon.
Back on this afternoon, yeah.
Lovely
so
stuff.
Looking forward.
And Greg,
to
thank you. And David, I honestly am so excited.
Brilliant. Listen, we'd love to celebrate success and partnership and stuff that's good for the county as well, Breathe. That's where we leave it on the show today.